This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Mike Penna and Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, back in the saddle with my usual entry mate right here on the show, and that is retired jockey Christina McManigal. We are in our Lexington, Kentucky studios and extending a very special welcome to everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220 XM Channel 206 and everyone tuning in on our website, on your smartphone, or on your tablet with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. Don't forget, each week a portion of the proceeds from Jock Talk are given back to the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network. That's the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, and we encourage everyone to support the PDJF and help those riders who have given our sport so much, and because of those injuries they sustained while riding, they are no longer able to do that. So you can support the PDJF and learn more by going to pdjf.org. Christina, great to be back in the saddle with you again.
It's been too long, Mike.
Yeah. Thanks for filling in the last couple of weeks, by the way. I was traveling to Saratoga and bringing our listeners all that coverage and everything. And great job the past couple of weeks here.
Thank you, Mike. It's funny. I was just thinking how we always talk to the jockeys on the show about how busy the life of a jockey is and how much traveling they do. Well, you're doing the same exact thing. You're a gypsy now.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep up with Javier Castellano and John Velasquez. Let me tell you something. I don't know how these top jockeys do it. I cannot figure that out, because first of all, they're in multiple time zones during the week most of the time, right? And even if they're not, they're still hopping on planes and hopping on helicopters, and they're driving here and driving, and then they're raising a family. Keep in mind, these are regular people, right? We talk about that all the time here on Jock Talk. It's amazing.
It's tough. I mean, there's the incentive of winning million-dollar races too, but still, it's tough.
Yeah, unbelievable. Well, tonight we're going to focus on an up-and-coming young star in the sport of thoroughbred racing, and that is the 24-year-old native of Marinette, Wisconsin, and that's Callie Francois. Now, if you don't know the name Callie Francois, well, you're going to, trust me, because she is a very driven young lady. She's an apprentice rider. She won her very first race this past Sunday at Monmouth Park with a horse by the name of Brave Titan, who won by 6.5 lengths in taking the second race. It was her 29th attempt to win a race, or at least according to Monmouth Park. If you look at Equibase, it was her 35th attempt, and she finally breaks through. I'm sure she doesn't care if it was 29 or 35. She is now a winning jockey in our sport of thoroughbred racing. Pretty cool.
Very cool. Very cool. It's always nice to get that first win off the bat.
Well, Callie, welcome to the program. Happy to have you on board and looking forward to the visit. And first and foremost, congratulations on the big win.
Hi, guys. You're making me blush. Oh, my goodness.
Well, I can only imagine that it had to be a bit frustrating for you as you're going through and, you know, riding whatever it was, 29, 35 races, and then you finally break through. You had, I think, 9 runner-up finishes in that stretch. Was it getting a little frustrating?
You know, I thought I was cursed there for a little bit, but no, I know that's the way it's the way the game is. You just have to take every ride for what it is and get the most out of you can. And it was really good to get that win. It was good to get the weight off the shoulders and just get on with it. So,
take me back to last Sunday and that moment in the second race when you finally realized that you're going to win your first race. Describe that moment.
I was about at the 3:16 when I knew it was going to happen. This is, you know, so then I was about at the 8th pole, and I just kind of started to relax. I kept going, I kept riding, but I felt relieved. It was total relief. It was great.
What else was going through your mind, Callie? Did you think about Did you think about the connections, how happy they would be? Did you think about the initiation that usually happens to every jockey when they win their first race?
I knew. I expected that. Definitely expected that. So that I just had to accept. And I know the trainer was thrilled with the win. So definitely a good note.
What was the initiation, Kelly?
Ice water was this initiation. So I know Rispoli and Andre were pretty well, so I knew that once they got done with the race, they were first to line up and fill their water buckets.
I was going to ask you about the reaction from the other riders there at Monmouth Park. What was the reaction, and what is the general reaction when a young rider jumps up and wins their first race?
You know, and the crew is so... That was my first time at Monmouth Park, a beautiful track and great people. So I had nothing but positive support, and it was just a really overall great feeling, great camaraderie.
Callie, I saw a picture on Facebook where you were in process of getting dumped with this ice water, and you just kind of looked like you were soaking it up, though. I mean, it's just a moment that you'll always remember, and you kind of had to just soak it up and take it for what it was.
It was. It was fun. Feel free to tell me where you found that Facebook photo, because I have not seen a single photo of that incident yet, and I would love to see that. But yeah, you know, it's all about taking the most out of every moment and just rolling with it. So it was great. It was great getting initiated and finally being able to call myself a jockey. So,
Christine, did you have a similar experience with your first win?
Oh, I did. The ice water. I had baby powder. I had shaving cream. I don't even know what was in those buckets, really.
They get creative.
They do. They get very creative. That's true.
How many texts and phone calls, emails, and things like that have you received, Callie?
I'm still getting a couple of them. They've been ongoing, but quite a few.
Who was the first?
My dad. Yep.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, my dad and then a valet up in New York.
Beautiful. Well, you know, I was looking up some statistics here, and just for your knowledge, you are now only 7,140 victories behind your mentor, Chris McCarron, and only 3,701 behind the all-time leading female rider, Julie Crone. So you're getting there. Slow but sure.
Well, I was looking at, you know, we had this conversation prior to the interview, but I just think it's wild that you're asking, you know, first of all, thank you for the opportunity for me to be on your show, and I'm very grateful for this because I'm looking at the roster of who you've had on your show, and, you know, if you total all those wins, there are over 82,000 wins, and I've only had one win, so I think it's wild that I'm on the show, so thank you for having me.
Wait a minute. You went back and added up the number of wins of all the jocks we've had on Jock Talk?
I was in front of the computer, so I just went with it.
That is impressive.
This girl does her homework.
Yeah, you want a job in research with HRN? We can probably hook you up there, too, if you want to stop that writing stuff. Wow, just amazing. Kelly Francois here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kelly, were there specific jockeys that you looked up to as a kid?
It's funny that you mentioned that because I was not interested in racing at all prior to, even halfway through Chris's school. I was never interested in racing. So I never followed, as a kid, this sounds really bad saying this, but I never followed any jockeys. I never really followed any racing. It was never, a proper interest of mine. So I have, nobody. I didn't really follow anybody when I was a kid.
Well, Callie, tell me exactly why you attended the jockey school, why you first applied, I guess.
Well, at that time, I was actually a working student for an eventer, and I was headed back to school, University of Wisconsin, with no idea what I wanted to major in and trying to figure out a way into the, equine industry, and My dad heard, he had a couple of thoroughbred brood mares and heard about this jockey school through the word of mouth, and he kind of said, jockey school? And I said, why not? So, went in for a quick interview and went through the selection process fairly quickly, and next semester I was in Lexington.
Well, amazing. I'm going to read a quote that you wrote. It was in a blog last December, and the blog was on the Chronicle of the Horse. You were actually over in Australia at the time you wrote this, but here was your opening quote. It said, "No. No way, no how. What exactly is the point of running around in circles when I could be doing something much cooler, like riding through cross-country and show jump courses and run around in circles at a slightly slower pace in the dressage ring? Racing, in all actuality, looks boring and is not the sport for me. Pointless, just no." That was your opinion of racing 5 or 6 years ago, right?
That was. I mean, that was on point. Absolutely. I was, you know, I was one of those judgmental showgirls. Absolutely. you know, going through the experiences that I've gone through, obviously, I made a complete 180 transaction through that. But that was my overall opinion of racing before I actually opened my mind and got into it.
Kelly, what was your first attitude when you walked into the barn at Chris's school? What was your attitude? Was it just, okay, well, I'm going to learn more about horses, or was it, were you respectful of Chris and what he had accomplished, or did you just not really realize at the time? What was your attitude going in there?
It was skeptical. I was silently judging all of the other kids. No, I didn't know, because I didn't have the background that a lot of other kids have in racing, I didn't realize to the extent of exactly what Chris did. And I just, honestly, I looked at him as a really nice guy who was willing to help kids out who wanted to learn, which I think is a great thing. So just kind of listening to Chris and, you know, going forward with it.
You know, you were an accomplished event rider, both regionally and nationally as you were growing up. How much different was it to learn being the art of being a jockey? I'll put it that way.
Well, I wouldn't say I was entirely successful in my short-lived eventing career, but I got a lot of experience through that, and really looking at the process of becoming a rider, becoming a show jump rider, an event rider, any type of rider, what have you, quarter horse, you know, Western pleasure rider, what have you. It's the process should be, I've used that same learning process into the process of becoming a jockey. Taking everybody has something to give you. There's always something to take away from somebody. And if you don't, that's just a missed opportunity. There's always, you know, as you know, in this industry, there's always something to learn. You never stop learning until you're 6 feet under. So very much approached it the same way.
Well said, Callie. And something I had noticed during my time going through the school and then when I spent some time helping out there was that oftentimes it was the riders from the show jumping world or any kind of discipline in which the pace was much slower, but oftentimes those experienced riders who would come into the school, when they started to go fast, all of a sudden they said, oh, this is not for me. How was it whenever you first started to pick up the speed on the backs of those thoroughbreds? How was that?
Well, when I was a kid, I had a great childhood. I had some access to some pretty cool land when I was growing up on the farm, so I kind of would go out there by myself and kind of go gung-ho around there. So going at a faster speed wasn't really an issue for me. I think, obviously, I'm still in it, you know, into the fast speeds for a reason. So I thought it was fun.
What eventually changed your attitude about racing? What experience was it that you could point to that really changed things for you?
Probably the passion that Chris had when he was teaching. My only access up until this point of getting into the industry was all of the, you know, the stigma that racing has on it. or has had on it in the past, and I didn't know what the people were going to be like. So Chris's overall passion for teaching us really sparked that interest.
Well, nobody knows that better than Christina.
Absolutely. Chris is one of my heroes, of course. What did you take away from Chris, Callie, aside from the obvious, aside from all of the wonderful advice he would give when it comes to riding? What else? He's just such an interesting and knowledgeable person. What else did you take away from the school from Chris?
Oh, my gosh. I took as much as I could. I actually have most of my notes saved on a hard drive somewhere, and I go back to them every now and then. I mean, watching, you know, sitting there. In fact, I remember a lot of times when you were riding when I was in the school, and during our, you know, we would have a class where we would just sit there, and we would go through races and watch races and pick apart races, and a lot of them were your races. So I thought,
no,
yeah,
oh, no.
How cool was that? But and he was, just to let you know, Christina, Chris is so proud of you. he's insanely proud of what the, you know, the rider that you became when you were riding. So very much looked up to you when I was in the school.
Well, thank you. You will do the same thing.
You know, it's a race at a time. I can't expect anything to happen. So I like to keep my expectations low and my standards high. So we'll see what goes on from there. But yeah, I tried to take, and I still talk to Chris every now and then. And you know, if I ever have any questions for him, he's willingly answers them without a hitch. And just, I took so much from him, as you know, in relation to how you talk to, you know, how you talk to trainers, how you talk to other jockeys. Really, just tried to soak up everything that he told me like a sponge.
You know, that's the thing about Chris's school, was that when he was teaching, he tried to teach you not just about riding horses, but about how to handle yourself out in the everyday world, right? I mean, it wasn't just about getting on the back of a horse in the afternoons. There were so many other elements that went into his teaching method. Is that right, Callie?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it was great, you know, anywhere from, you know, the racing skills class, which is the class where we would sit there and, you know, analyze races, but there was a nutritional class, there was a financial class, there was just a general management class, and then, of course, we had, there's a room, you know, full of about 8 or 9 equalizers, and just work on technique and, you know, the basics, like, you know, taking your goggles down, you know, switching your stick, flipping your stick, getting that base rhythm is what he was his main priority, and which is what a main priority is when you do ride. So,
well, you had the opportunity, like so many of the students that go through Chris's school do, you had the opportunity to spend some time doing an internship. And your internship was with trainer Todd Pletcher, and you spent about 2.5 years learning from Todd. Tell me about that experience.
I mean, you know, I was skeptical of the racing before I got into Chris's school, and then I got sent to Todd, and that really changed my opinion on what racing really is all about. I owe those guys so much. The fact that, you know, on top of the fact that you get to ride so many different horses, you're just surrounded by a great crew of people. Those guys, you know, going as far as my riding goes, I went back to square one, and they started me from there. I learned whatever I missed from Chris in the saddle, I got that and heaps more at Todd's. You know, I went from it goes from the process of, I was riding, you know, older horses, and then I went back, I started in Saratoga, and I, you know, learned how to ride babies and breaking out of the gates, and the assistant, I have to give a lot of credit to the assistant, Tristan Berry, over there, because when I started, he was excellent with the learning curve of my riding and what I could do and what I couldn't do, and being, just the whole crew, just in general, you know, Hector, Nick, all those guys, it was just incredible. And they were incredible people to be around on a daily basis and get after you and encourage you, and just I could speak more volumes, but I'm just gonna stop. I'm gonna stop while I'm ahead.
It's funny, Callie. I feel like I'm listening to myself talk when you describe your experience at Pletcher's, because if anyone is a skeptic of racing, they should go watch that barn in action, and just the care that goes into those animals, and just the great people that work there. Of course, Todd himself being one of them. And you mentioned Tristan, and it's funny because I also came up under Tristan, and he as well is an excellent instructor. And it's amazing to look back and think about, I'm sure you do the same thing, to think about the horses you had the opportunity to gallop, some of the best horses in the country.
I completely agree with you. Oh, my goodness. Because those horses, you know, it's not just the people that teach you, but it's the horses that teach you as well. And like I said, amazing.
You're exactly right. Who are some of the big-name horses you had the opportunity to gallop?
I got the opportunity to gallop Dreaming of Julia. Unfortunately, I got hurt right before her first start. Everybody at the barn will tell you I'm obsessed with him. He's retired now, but my favorite horse of all time was Wee Miss Artie. Very cool horse. Stop Charging Maria. Elena Strikes was another Stone Street horse. San Pablo was another stakes winner. So it was really, it was cool. It was amazing to see, you know, to be the gallop girl behind it and to put all the work into the horse and then see the result. It was just, it was an amazing, uplifting experience, as well as I love the process of working with young horses and just watching them progress and watching them grow into, you know, some exceed your expectations, some meet your expectations, and sometimes it doesn't work out. You know, that's the industry, but seeing that whole process unfold is just awesome, amazing.
Kelly, well, that experience, and I'm talking as somebody who has never ridden a horse, obviously, will that experience of being aboard a tremendous horse, like you mentioned, like say Wee Miss Artie, for example, right? You're aboard those really good horses in the morning. Does that experience help you now that you're out on your own and you're actually riding races in the afternoon?
Absolutely. Without a doubt, 100%.
How so?
It's just like when you start learning to ride, in general, you don't want to ride a young green horse. You don't mix a green rider with a green horse. In that sense, if you learn from a horse that moves well, knows its job, knows what it's doing, you have a better chance of being able to communicate to the horse or, you know, go out with a plan or go out with a procedure when you're in the saddle in the afternoons on a different horse that doesn't know what so much how to do it or how to come about it or is struggling. You know how to make that happen because the muscle memory is there from doing it on horses that are just automatic with it.
I know, Callie, speaking from experience, you get spoiled a little bit galloping for Pletcher, and then when you start out as an apprentice, fortunately you don't get to ride horses in the afternoon like we miss Artie and horses like that, but you'll get there. But you mentioned briefly an injury. What happened there?
That was right after I graduated from the school, and it was my first Saratoga. You know, I was down in Palm Meadows for that semester, and then I went over to Saratoga, and it was one of those things where the filly was, you know, a quiet filly, and something happened, and she ended up bolting and ended up hitting the rail at the Oklahoma track, and that, long story short, it ended up with two screws in my ankle and my talus bone, so I was out for about a total of 8 months.
Wow. What was your reaction or your thoughts about racing at that point?
Fortunately, I did not remember the accident at all. So I had no, you know, there was no fear. There was no fear factor. And on top of that, even if I did remember it, that's the way the industry is. It's not, you know, and you guys know as well as I do, it's not a matter of if it's when and how bad. And it's something, if you want it, you're just going to look past any injuries and you're just going to still keep going for it. And that's the only way you can properly look at it.
Visiting with apprentice jockey Callie Francois here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. She is fresh off her very first career victory at Monmouth Park, the first of no doubt many more to come. And Christina, as we listen to her story, and we're getting ready to go to a commercial break, we'll come back with the second half of the program and finish this visit with Callie. But when you hear her story, it reminds me an awful lot of your story.
I know.
The Racing Academy, the Todd Pletcher internship. I mean, there's so many similarities there.
It's a little bit creepy, Mike. It's like I said, I feel like I'm listening to myself talk. But what an incredible, determined young lady she is. And she has a very bright future.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to continue this visit with Callie Francois coming up in the second half of the program. And it's right here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
The next big thing in horse racing radio is coming to HRRN, September 23rd. Express Bet Radio on HRRN. Get ready.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz, and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Xacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
The Breeders' Cup runs here.
Bayern, Toast of New York, California Chrome. Bayern, Toast of New York, Bayern has won it. Bayern got there by a head under Martin Garcia over Toast of New York. It's Untappable in front, Untappable the leader. Don't Tell Sophia flying on the outside. Untappable going to get there. Untappable has won it. Judy the Beauty sticks her neck out, goes for the wire. On the outside, Better Lucky's catching. Better Lucky, Judy the Beauty. Judy the Beauty, one and a head and a thriller. Main sequence finishing best of all, late run from Twilight Eclipse. But it is Main Sequence to score. Main Sequence has one and a head.
The Breeders' Cup, October 30th and 31st. Exclusively here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Cal Density. Go to horseracingradio.net for more information and to listen live.
Hello, everyone. This is Corey Johnson with the Jockey Talk 360 Weekly Update. Jockey Joel Rosario won three stakes races during the opening week of Belmont Park's fall meeting and still found time to get away to Indiana Downs to capture a fourth stakes race. That effort helped him win the Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week for September 8th to the 13th. Rosario finished a solid sixth in the rider standings at Saratoga over the summer and is now leading the Belmont Park race with six wins. Five of those wins at Belmont came for Rosario on Saturday, September 12th. The biggest of those five wins came aboard Godolphin Racing Sentiera Italia, who turned in her second straight standout performance to claim the Grade 2 $500,000 Sands Point Stakes. A midweek run to Indiana was worth it for Rosario when he captured the Indiana Downs Centaur Stakes on Wednesday, September 9th, aboard Courtier for trainer Bill Mott. For the week, Rosario finished with 17 mounts, 7 wins, 3 seconds and two-thirds for $985,000 in earnings. For the rider of the week, it was yesterday. Jockey Robbie Alvarado rides the Kentucky Downs course as good as anybody, and in the ninth race, the $300,000 Kentucky Downs Turf Dash, he guided Sweet Luca to an upset victory. There were four horses across the line at the finish, and with a perfectly timed ride, Alvarado got Sweet Luca up just in time. Sweet Luca paid $29.20. Also, always keep an eye out on racetrackwarriors.com. The jockey draft games are a lot of fun to play. Remember, Racetrack Warriors has a very low takeout, so it's a great way to win money. You pick your team of 8 jockeys, and then you go up against other players, and the better your jockeys do, the better chance you have to win. Once again, this is Corey Johnson for the weekly update for Jockey Talk 360.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Brave Titan wrestles control. Little Tom on the inside as they get set to pass the quarter pole. Stay Determined is a close-up third and looks to make a menacing move here as they approach the top of the stretch. Designer Shiner has a work to do. Then it's Dynamis on the rail and Time Walker. The half was 46-1. In the stretch run now, it's Brave Titan. Brave Titan drifting out badly here, but leading it by 5. It's Brave Titan, Stay Determined, late move from Designer Shiner, and up the rail, Time Walker. On the grandstand side, it's Brave Titan. Brave Titan takes it, a wide winner over Designer Shiner, Time Walker, and Stay Determined.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, retired jockey Christina McManigal, our producer Lee Della Pina. We are with you in our Lexington, Kentucky studios and continuing our visit with apprentice jockey Callie Francois. And as you just heard that call by Frank Miramati, Brave Titan, a winner of the second race at Monmouth Park this past Saturday, won by 6.5 lengths, and that was the very first career victory for Callie, the native of Marinette, Wisconsin. And happy to have her with us here on Jock Talk tonight. And Callie, when you, again, going back to that moment, I know we touched on it in the top of the show, but when you think back to that day on Sunday afternoon and that call of the race and that stretch run and pulling away and finding out you're going to win, it has to bring back just some unbelievable memories.
So it was kind of just like swiping the hand across the forehead and going, like, it's over, it's done with. I, you know, knocked the monkey off my back. So it was a very good feeling.
So what's next? Do you set goals for yourself?
At first I did, but in reality, you have to live each day out. And you go, I'm going race by race. And then you look, you know, you go by every race and see if you improved and how you can improve better, and then just go from there. At the moment right now, I've been at Delaware. Up until this point, I've been at Delaware. But actually, as of today, I'm packing up my stuff and I'm headed to Laurel right now. So hopefully we'll see what turns up there. Hopefully some cool opportunities to get on some horses. And basically that's it. After that, I take it day by day. So I can't tell you where I'm going to be in a couple months.
I love the way you just said you'll think about things that you can do better and improve upon. And we hear that with professional athletes all the time. I mean, we hear NFL players say it. We hear Major League Baseball players say it. They'll have a great game and they'll say, geez, but you know, I could have had even a better game. There are still things that I can work on. So if you're assessing your film of that race or any of your races so far, what are some of the things that Callie says, hey, I can get better in these areas? What are those areas?
Oh, man. You have to remember I'm an apprentice, so there's plenty that I can be working on. But as of this point, right now, it's just making sure I get out of the gate and get my position is the most important thing, and then just really making sure I've got the rebound and the stretch and, you know, saving my ground and just keeping in a rhythm and getting stronger is the main goal. But that will come in time with more horses that I get on.
All right, let me flip it around for you. What are a couple of the things that you say that you do really well?
Because I'm a 10-pound buck, I don't believe I have the merit to, you know, be bragging about any highlights that I have of my riding. I'd rather just get on a horse and show you. But for a 10-pound buck, because of my experience with Chris and with other top, you know, with other jockeys that I look to, I do a lot of homework. I think I do plenty of homework, and I have a good base knowledge of that horse before I, you know, swing my leg over and break it out of the gates. Other than that, I really
sell yourself.
There, but hey. I don't like to, you know.
Yeah, I know you're being so you're being so humble right now, right? And I know that's how you are. I know you're being extremely humble, but okay, I'm an owner. I'm thinking about putting you on my horse. Why should I ride Cali Francois?
Well, for one, I have the 10 pounds off, so it's gonna make a much easier trip for that horse going around there with the weight off. But I do, for a 10-pound bug, I do think I have a pretty decent finish on a horse. And like I said, this is just my base. There's plenty to go off of, but I think I have, you know, pretty solid mindset of, you know, getting that horse out of the gate and putting that horse in the best position possible.
All right, you got my vote. You got the mount. You're in. Explain, Christine, I'm going to let you explain this. The 10-pound bug that she just talked about, we've heard her mention that a few times. Now, people are probably listening going, okay, what is a 10-pound bug and why is it a 10-pound bug? What are the different levels?
Well, first of all, they call it a 10-pound bug because in the program, there's an asterisk next to the jockey's name. And from way back when, they used to call that the bug because it looked like a bug on paper, I suppose. But when a rider starts out, and it's different state to state, but when they first start out, usually they're a 10-pound bug. Usually if it's you win 40 races, then you'll be a 7. Five races, you'll be 7. 40 races, you'll be a 5-pound bug.
It, meaning you get a weight allowance.
Yes.
From the other riders. You get to ride with a lighter weight.
Exactly. If a horse is in with 124,
right.
Well, with Kelly, they're going to be in with 114.
Right.
So that's a big, it is a big advantage, now, absolutely.
Kelly, I would think, and I know I put you on the spot there with that question about selling yourself to me, but I would think that that's got to be a huge selling point for you and a huge advantage. I know you don't have the experience, but you do get in 10 pounds lighter than the veteran riders, and that has to be a big selling point for you.
Huge selling point, absolutely.
Kelly, I'm going to be your agent for a second here and also brag a little bit on you. I watched your replay, and Chris would always use the phrase, when a rider had a very good form, especially on the backside, he would always say, I could put a wine glass on that rider's back, and they wouldn't spill the wine. Well, I feel like on the back stretch of that race, you had perfect form, and you obviously get horses to run for you because that horse paid $14.60 to win. So I think you're doing just fine.
Unfortunately, and you can see, I've had a couple, you know, I've had quite a few seconds, but I do think a good, you know, a positive thing in my riding so far is that some of the horses, I'm surprised how well they've been running for me. So they've been making an effort, which I think is great.
$14.60 to win. All right, so Kelly, now you have my cell phone number. So when that's going to happen again, I expect a text message before the race.
You're not the first one to tell me that.
Kelly Francois here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Hey, did you notice Kelly's Twitter feed and her Twitter handle?
I did not.
What's up with this, Kelly? It's Miss Francois to you. That's your Twitter handle. What's up with that?
That's right.
The 10-pound bug wants a little respect.
Well, I hope I would be getting it anyway.
You know, here's the cool thing about your, not just your Twitter handle, but I looked on your page, and right up the top it says, wait, I'm not a Gallup girl anymore? That's pretty cool.
But it feels good. I've spent a good amount of time just sitting there, just preparing and giving, and I waited a long time, in opposed to a lot of other people who are, you know, preparing themselves to be a jockey and starting out. But I did want to give myself every single opportunity to learn as much as I can. I'm a big believer in, you know, luck is just a matter of, you know, preparation, meeting opportunity. And I just, that's my big belief. So I did as much as I could before that first time out.
Callie, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know if this is legitimate information, but I believe it is. Did you ride for Pletcher in races as a bug?
I did, yep.
Your first two races, I believe, yes?
I did. I was very very fortunate. My first race was at Belmont, and my second was at Aqueduct on the turf.
Wow. What, was Todd there to give you a leg up?
Todd was there for the first one, and then for the second one, he was at the Breeders' Cup, so I guess he had to be over on the other side of the country. But Byron did an okay job.
What did he say to you that first time when he gave you the leg up?
Well, I was in the jocks room. He actually asked me what another jockey's thoughts were on how I should ride this race. and the other jock started to give me a strategy, but he stopped and he said, you know what, just worry about it, get out there and just have fun. So
good advice.
That was basically the goal.
Yeah, good advice. All right, so tell me about your preparation before the race. How much time do you spend going through a racing form, looking at the program, watching replays? How much of that goes into it?
It depends per horse. So if the horse doesn't have a lot of starts, there's not as much to go off of, but for some of these horses that I've been getting on, they've had quite a bit of experience. So I hit up Equimaster DRF and I go through most of their past wins, just to see what works best for that horse. And then I go through a couple of their previous races, you know, recent races, to see if they just have any tendencies or habits that have become very new. And otherwise, sometimes I'll go through a couple races where they haven't done so well, so I know what not to do with that horse. And just kind of, that's the best way to get a general feel for a horse. So I can't give you a specified time, but anywhere per horse, anywhere from 15 minutes to a half an hour.
So, Kelly, you've described the research that goes involved into prepping for a race. How about physically for you? What do you do physically to prep?
Physically, yeah, that's another huge thing. It's been a lot of preparation a lot of it has become muscle memory over time. I've spent a lot of time on the Equisizer, just getting that base muscle fitness, getting that base position, and then going off, you know, getting a rhythm, practicing that rhythm, practicing switching my sticks, practicing that different types of hitting. I can't tell you how many hours I've spent on the Equisizer, but it's been a lot. And then when I'm not racing or if I'm not on the Equisizer and I like to work out. I'm at the gym. I do some cardio. I like to swim for my cardio, a little bit of yoga. I'll go to the weight room. And then just do some different core exercises, a lot of core exercises.
You know, just getting on the back of a horse can get you fit, though, can it?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that, you know, it's a great warm-up in the morning, especially if you're going to be riding in the afternoons. It's always good to get a feel of a horse as much as you can, whether you're riding it in a race or not. So I try and get on as many horses as I can in between. And since I'm not riding a lot right now, I do have the time to put the hours into the gym in the afternoons when I don't ride. So, but other than that, I believe getting on horses in the morning is very important.
Well, you know, for somebody that's only won or just won her first career race, you certainly have an interesting background, and you have a lot of experience in the sport, not just going through Chris's school here in Lexington, but also spending some time in Australia. And one of the people you had the chance to visit with last year in Australia is Gay Waterhouse, who is among the greatest trainers that we have in the sport of thoroughbred racing. She joined us on our trainer talk show a few weeks back when we were in Saratoga, and it was such a delight to hear her story and to visit with her for a little while. And I can imagine that that had to be a huge thrill for you.
It was truly an experience that you can't take away from anybody. I mean, it was phenomenal. The team was great as well. I've a lot of opportunities there, and I did get the opportunity to ride non-sanctioned races for her at Randwick, and I got to do it around a lot of, you know, the Sydney jockeys, the top jockeys over there. So that was extremely beneficial.
How was it learning from the First Lady of Australian Racing, as she's known? How was it learning from her from a perspective that she's this incredibly successful woman in racing, and you had to look up to her? And what did you take away from talking to her?
Her charisma and her attitude as a businesswoman is second to none. So that right off the bat is something that I picked up from her. And it was a lot of little details that she got after me about. And again, just the enthusiasm that she and the presence that she carries about herself, that's something I really picked up. I hope I picked up well on when I was over there. She's great with young riders. I was one of the apprentices there while I was there. And at any point in time, there was a minimum of three apprentices and a maximum of five or six apprentices there in one morning.
How much different is it in Australia than it is here in the United States with the way that the business is run, number one, and with the way that riders approach a race every day?
The way riders approach a race tactfully, are you talking in preparation up to the race or actually riding the race?
I guess both. Did you notice a difference?
Absolutely. I listened to the episode with Gay, and as she told you, they break out of the gates, and then they sit there and they have a cup of tea, and then they sprint down the stretch for the last bit of it. And in preparation, I also got the opportunity to go to the apprentice school over there and go in there for a couple sessions. They hold it very differently, and it's held through the government, so it's a once a month kind of thing. And the way the apprenticeship works over there is that you're indentured to one trainer, where it's completely opposite over here. You're freelancing over here. But in preparation for a race, they basically do the same thing. They don't have the systems quite like we do as far as just looking at a past performance, slip. They go online and they do look at the past form of a horse, and then they can have access to replays, in which they look at the replays a lot. So the way they prepare is basically the same way.
I remember talking with you, Callie, right before you made that move, and I remember how excited you were to give it a go. What led to the decision to make that move and to go to Australia?
Well, I was in Saratoga, and actually a different valet up in New York, Rodney Payne, he is from Australia, and he mentioned, he's like, well, why don't you just go over there and, you should go over there and get him some barrier trials. And I was like, I didn't take it too seriously, and I didn't know what barrier trials were. But then I went home that night, and I looked him up, and I thought, they're non-sanctioned races that give you a great bait experience, to give me a base. And I kind of went with that. And then, actually, the eventer that I used to work for is Australian, and I actually asked his previous assistant to see if he knew anybody besides Rodney. But either way, they ended up having the same connections to Gay, and basically talked to her racing manager, Adrian Bowden, was connecting with him and making sure everything was good. And then I waited until things were kind of set before I brought up the idea to Todd, and Todd thought it was a great idea. Went on from there, and it was great. I mean, it was an amazing experience.
Kelly, I watched your YouTube video of the barrier trial that you had posted on the internet. That is just, that has to be so good for an up-and-coming apprentice, because it's basically like a practice race, except I remember reading not every horse, you don't always make every horse finish. It's more like a public work. And you have
it
to,
is. You kind of... Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And what was very fortunate about getting into Gay's outfit is that she is a little bit, she runs her barrier trials a little bit different than they do as opposed to the other trainers. She'll make those horses work and she'll make them go flat out. So it gave me a really good opportunity to, like, if I rode for a different trainer, I wouldn't be able to, you know, pump a horse down the stretch. I would have had to kind of just sit there. And it would almost be more like breathing a horse rather than actually getting a horse acting, you know, a race-type situation, where with Gay, that's exactly what it was, and that was phenomenal. And they do that for, you know, they have, the way it works is that they do city tracks, provincial tracks, and country tracks. So I was actually pretty close to riding in a race over there. You have to ride 20 barrier trials in the city tracks before you get approved to ride in a race there. But if I were apprenticed to a trainer in the country, I would only have to ride 10, and then I could ride, you know, country races over in Australia. But either way, it was a very cool. It was, that really helped out my base.
You didn't pick up on the accent, though, Kelly.
I think I did a little bit when I got back home, but I was in Wisconsin for about 2 weeks when I got back home, so I got the state accent back right away.
Yeah, did your friends in Wisconsin tell you that you sounded like you were from Australia?
Like the first day or so, and then a couple of phrases I might have picked up, but they're kind of long gone now.
Good day, mate.
Nobody says that.
What?
The only place that I heard that was in Western Australia.
Wow.
What was living over there like? I've obviously never been to Australia. What was just daily living like?
I mean, you know, they're pretty normal over there. I mean, they're Australians, but they're not aliens. Like, no, it was very normal. They do have some apartments throughout the Gay stable yard. I did not live in those. I was in Sydney, so it was a pretty normal, I was in a suburb. I was in the surf, you know, kind of the surfy suburb, let's call it. And, yeah, it was just pretty cool. Very cool.
I would love to go to Australia.
Everybody's so
chill. I think it'd be great. Yeah, I think to make a trip over there, Melbourne Cup, they have the Caulfield Cup, right? It would be incredible. The Cox Plate. I would love to go there. I think it would just be an incredible trip, not just for the horse racing, but just to see the country, because it certainly looks like it's amazing. Kelly,
the country is, really cool. Very cool country.
You mentioned earlier that your very first text after you won your race this weekend was from your dad. And just kind of curious about your parents. What did they think of you becoming a jockey?
It's really funny that you bring that up, because I grew up in my dad, he grew up in Nebraska, and he had a little bit of a horsey background. So he knows, when I was about 8 or 9, I wanted to get, you know, take some lessons, and he kind of knew what would happen. You know, as the mix of girls and horses, it never goes away. So he tried to stop it before he even started, and he didn't want me to take any lessons. And then my mom just decided to take me to lessons anyway and not tell my dad about it. I didn't grow up in a big city in Wisconsin, so it's a fairly small town, so we had to travel about an hour down to Green Bay for some lessons. Then that started, and once he found out, then, you know, he got into it, and he grew up a Western guy, and he was, you know, at first he was like, you know, no English and no jumping. Well, little did he know at that time that I was already taking jumping lessons, and, you know, then it grew into, you know, no riding thoroughbreds or warm bloods and the like, and I ended up with an, you know, X-racer that I have ended with. And by the time it got at this point, he was so used to me doing everything that he didn't want me to do. So I think he was trying the whole reverse psychology thing when he brought up the racing thing, and then I took it. And so now you know, the first couple of years that I was into this, he's like, you know, you can walk away at any time you want to. And I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm staying with it. So, but overall, they've been extremely supportive. They both have been athletes, so they know what it's like to get injuries, and especially with horses, it's not a matter of if, it's when and how bad. So they've been extremely supportive this entire time.
Athletes, what did your parents do?
My mom was, my dad was actually a bodybuilder, believe it or not. And then my mom, she was a gymnast at Iowa State.
Wow.
So it's in the pedigree.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's definitely in the pedigree. Did they watch your race on television, Callie?
They do. Not only did, I'm sure they watched it, they actually, they've got a business at home and they broadcast it. They've got a TV at the business and people will, I guess people from my hometown come over when I have a race and they'll watch the race. So I think it's pretty funny.
How many times have you watched the replay of your win?
Plenty of times. It would be a little embarrassing to say how many times I actually did watch it, but yeah, watched it plenty of times.
Yeah, not at all. That would have been posted on my Twitter account. It would have been posted on my Facebook. It would have been sent to everybody that I knew if I actually was a jockey and I won my first race. That, don't be ashamed of that at all, Kaylee.
No, not at all. I mean, a win's a win. It was fantastic.
Yeah, watch it as many times as you can. Just about a minute and a half or 2 minutes left here, Kelly, and it's really flown by. We could spend another hour talking about your experiences and your career so far, and it's just getting started. Who's the jockey that you would most like to emulate?
There's so many, but and the thing is, every jockey has a certain attribute that is most admirable about them. But overall, I look up to John Velasquez a lot. Just as a person and as a role model, he's just the best. You can't say enough about him.
Kelly, what do you want to be known for? What do you want your trademark as a rider to be?
To win.
Well,
good answer. Yeah, good answer.
Being a clean rider and getting the best out of a horse. That's really all you need.
Well, it started off on the right foot. What's next for Callie Francois now? Where do you go after Monmouth is now closed?
Well, that was my first and only time so far that I've ridden at Monmouth. But as I mentioned before, I'm headed to Laurel now. So I've never ridden at Laurel. I was there one morning. And like I said, we're going to see what turns up out of that.
Callie, quick question. We're almost out of time, but most European riders do so well on the turf. Do you feel like your Australian experience helps you on the turf?
I am so ready and excited to get on the turf. It is unreal. I'm just waiting to get rid of my 10-pound bug so I can start riding the turf. I'm very excited to ride the turf.
Can you ride the turf as a 7-pound bug? You can, right?
Yes.
Yes, yes. But not as a 10-pound bug.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm sure it will only be a matter of time before we'll see you on the grass and you'll be rid of that 10-pound bug and moving on to bigger and better things. But Callie, want to thank you for taking the time to be with us here on Jock Talk presented by Tito's. It has been just a delight to hear your story. And I mentioned this before we came on the air, and I hope you don't mind me telling people this, but when I contacted you and asked you to come on the show, you said, are you sure you want me? Because typically you have more established jockeys, but really appreciate you being here with us.
And I'm so appreciative of the opportunity, Mike. Christina, thank you so much.
All right, Callie Francois, that's Miss Francois to you, by the way. Just keep that in mind. Callie, appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
All right. A lot of fun. And again, so many similarities in the early stages of her career with what you experienced in your career, Christina.
I enjoyed this hour very much, Mike. Great to talk to this upcoming star.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think we'll hear more from Callie Francois here up the road. And again, you can follow her on Twitter, Miss Francois. To you. That's the number 2, by the way. To you is her account there on Twitter. Been a lot of fun. We're back each and every Tuesday evening with Jock Talk. If you missed any portion, go to our website, horseracingradio.net. A podcast will be available. You can also do that, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for our special guest, Callie Francois, and for Christina McManigal, I'm Mike Pennell. We'll talk to you next time on Jock Talk presented by Tito's.